Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We have the general, John McClain, brought to us by Horn Solutions in the building. John, when did you find out about the Capella trade, man? Was it last night or did you wake up this morning to it?
No, it had been going on for a while, and I didn't understand why they wanted to trade him. They paid him $85 million last year. He played well last year. You know, Capella's a good rebounder. I know he's been injured this year, but getting Covington, a small forward, who's going to do what Capella did? You know, you could count on him on the boards. So when I heard about it 2 days ago, I started following it. And then when a friend of mine, a big Rockets fan, texted me last night and goes, "Oh, no, I can't believe he's gone." And so I checked it out. But Daryl Morey makes a lot of moves. You know, he doesn't sit on his hands, and they think getting Covington, a small forward, is going to help him, and we'll see how it works out.
Do you think he's done making moves? Because you know Morey's a guy that is a wizard.
As long as where they are seated, you know, they're back and forth with the Mavericks. I don't see Daryl Morey this being it. You know, as I've said this for years, he's like to me a mad scientist who's in his lab concocting something, And most of the time, you know, if you think about what Morey's done with all the players he's brought in here, including Russell Westbrook, who I never thought they could get, never thought they'd get Chris Paul, Dwight Howard. So I think, and I trust him, and I trust what Daryl Morey does. He knows what he's doing. He's got a good track record everywhere but China.
I tell you what, John, listen now. Clint Capella was a guy that the organization put a lot into. He got a new deal. They invested a bunch in him and trying to improve him as a player. Were you overall disappointed in his progression and his inability to become an offensive force down low for the Rockets?
No, he was what he was. You know, if you got guys like Westbrook and Harden, how many shots are you going to get?
Yeah.
You got Gordon coming off the bench. You know, you got to play a role. His role was to clog the middle, get rebounds. He did a good job at it, and he seemed like a class act in every way, and everybody should wish him the very best. I don't think he went in and said, demanded to be traded. It's just a move that Daryl Morey has made, and hopefully Mike D'Antoni will make it work.
Will this move get them over the hump? Do you think this will help them move them deeper in the playoffs or a better contender? Because they're like a 5 seed or a 6 seed back and forth from
right
Dallas.
Now,
yeah, right now they're 5.
They should be better. And, you know, what is better for the Rockets? Getting to the Western Conference Finals again? And is it just moving up a couple of spots? Because if you get on a hot streak late in the season, you know, you can move up.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing we know is they're not going to have to worry about getting eliminated by Golden State, I don't think. And so I don't know if this move for Covington is going to help him move up 3 spots in the seating. It has to be much more than any player they've acquired.
I tell you what, man, this move does make them better. I don't think it puts them at the level to where they compete with the big boys. But you had to do something. You had to figure out a way to improve your roster. I think a bigger question or more important one is, do you think the Rockets can ever get over the hump with James Harden being the most important player on the team?
I believe that, was it 2 years ago when Chris Paul's hamstring cost them the Golden State series? State beat the Cavs and for the championship, and the Rockets had a healthy Paul. Harden was there. I believe they would have won that series, gone on to beat the Cavs and win the NBA. So I believe, yes, with James Harden here, they can win a championship. They were in position to do it then, just like people say about the Texans being a Super Bowl contender. Well, I didn't think they were a Super Bowl contender this year. I said it before the season, during the season, after the season, and then they were in a great position, better than they've ever been, to get in the Super Bowl because of the way things had broken with Tennessee winning at New England and Baltimore. So The Texans were a Super Bowl contender this season and blew it. And so does that mean they can be a Super Bowl contender yet next year, even though we don't put them up there with Kansas City and Baltimore? Yes, they can be, because they were this season because of the way things broke. And a lot of things are going to have to break in their favor next season as well.
We're talking with John McClain, General John McClain, that is, brought to us by Horn Solutions. And the Houston Astros announced yesterday that they have a new GM in James Click, former executive with the Tampa Bay Rays. Man, what was your initial thoughts when Click was announced as the new GM of the Astros?
The Rays have had to do it unlike any other because of how little they spend on players. They get rid of them, they trade them. So it's like mining nuggets. You got to be better than the other people. And their farm system is tremendous. Mm-hmm. And they've had other people go on to other jobs. And like Andrew Friedman, their longtime president from Houston, the son of a longtime attorney here, Kenny Friedman, head of the Sports Authority. And Andrew wanted to go to a team, obviously, where he would have money to spend. And he goes to the Dodgers and able to pull off the kind of deals they pulled off for Mookie Betts. And I bet you they're not letting him get away. They wouldn't make that kind of deal if they didn't have an idea of what it was going to take to sign him. And I think you take a guy from that organization who's been in that organization and no other. Mm-hmm. He knows every trick. He's analytics. Dusty Baker needs an analytics guy. This is an analytics-driven organization. So I thought getting Click was a very shrewd move. When they got Luno, we knew nothing about him other than he was in a successful organization system. He did a tremendous job. He hired Hinch, and we're like, why in the world they want to hire this guy? Got fired. He didn't even have a 500 record. It was a great move there. So they made those moves then, so you hope it's going to work out with the moves they've made now, and I think it was a tremendous deal to get Click from the Rays.
I'm excited about Click, but are you worried about him having no experience as far as being a general manager at all?
No. Luno had no experience when he came in, and the game has changed a lot. The Astros have lost good people that have gone on to other organizations. That's when I think Luno's suspension's up, that one of those guys will hire him for their front office to be a background guy. Whether he can be a GM again, you know, he certainly has the talent, the experience, the resume. I believe he will be. Owners want to win. Look at some of the guys they let play in sports. And if you want to win, could you get a better manager than A.J. Hinch? I'll guarantee you about let's see, 15 minutes after his suspension's up, his agent will already have a job lined up for him. And Astros fans better hope it's not in their division.
Hey, John, when you talk about the loss of Luno and Hinch, in such an abrupt fashion, and then the ability of Jim Crane in such a short period of time to sign Dusty Baker and then sign Click, James Click. You know, talk about the job that he did putting the front office back together after the cheating scandal.
That was a blow like nobody else has ever had. And Crane got commended around the country for firing those guys when his suspensions were announced. I was still stunned that he did it, but he did it and got universal approval, except, of course, among fans here. And to get Dusty Baker, to me, he had a list of some veteran guys like Buck Showalter. If you can coach the Yankees, you ought to be able to manage the Yankees. You should be able to manage anywhere under any situation. Mm-hmm. But because Dusty Baker's as a player and as a manager has seen just about everything you can, he's such a cool hand. You know, you don't see him losing it. Maybe he's worried about swallowing his toothpick, but for whatever reason, I thought he was perfect for this situation. And I always wanted to see what people around the country think, that I respect media people, former managers, GMs, and the Dusty Baker deal got universal approval. Click's young. He's unproven as a GM, just like Jeff Luno was. But I know Crane did his homework. I'm sure he had people helping him and that know what they're doing. And I think the Astros are getting commended for this move as well.
What do you think about that dynamic of Dusty Baker being 70 and his new boss being 42, new to the job? How do you think that dynamic is going to shake out?
First of all, I don't have a problem because I'm old with age. And I've never seen.
And nobody should.
People think about Dusty because thinking, oh, boy, he made a bad decision because he's old. You know, he won two division championships with the Nationals. They did not get to the World Series. When he was fired, a lot of people up there were surprised, and I keep up with it because my wife is from there and has a season ticket package to the Nationals games, even though we never go. But she got them way back when, and she made some money last year selling those tickets when they went to the World Series. In fact, she told me, I have tickets for the Nationals home opener. Do you want to go see them raise the flag? I said, hell no, I don't want to go up there and be reminded that they beat the Astros again four times in Houston. No, sell them, make some money. No telling what those tickets are worth up there. And so people were really surprised and disappointed that Dusty Baker had been fired when they hired Dave Martinez. Now they've won a World Series. Of course, it was the right move to make. But I think Click will learn a lot from Baker, just like everybody in the organization will, because Dusty, I remember watching Dusty when he played against the Astros all those years. And he was such a class act. So I think Click will learn a lot from him. And I don't think at his age he's interested in going out and learning a lot about analytics. That's not what he's brought here
right.
for.
Right.
He's brought here to keep a steady hand on the stern and because he's going through uncharted waters.
Yeah.
When I was in Florida this weekend for the Hall of Fame, and I want to talk to y'all about that, see what you think about the class. But a friend of mine, Mark Waltz, lives close to the ballpark, and I go over there every year and stay with him and his wife, Margie, and we go to the Astros spring training games. And I said, last year we went to see him play the Cardinals, which is right next, you know, 5 minutes away. I want to go there, and I want to hear what the fans are going to be yelling at the Astros. It's like when they play the Rangers for the first time. Yep. I'm eager to see the yep. Rangers' new ballpark. And I told Carol, I want to get tickets close to the Astros' dugout
yeah.
so we can hear the abuse they're taking, because that's a good example of the way it's going to be for them everywhere they go. It's not like in football where you're wearing helmets
yeah.
and
yeah.
you've got crowd noise and you're a ways away. These guys, they're going to get unprecedented abuse. Yeah.
It reminded me of the Heatles when you had LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. Everywhere they went, they were getting terrorized by fans. Now, baseball's a little different. We talked about it earlier in the show. And Dusty Baker's a little more old school. In baseball, some players might have some problems with them, and they might throw the ball at each other. They might throw the ball at a few Astros players. So do you think Dusty will retaliate because of him being the old school guy that he is? And he's like, we're not going to take that from nobody. Or how do you feel like he'll handle just keeping the clubhouse together and just through the whole time?
Major League Baseball will make sure mm-hmm. every manager, general manager, and owner know you are on notice. If we think you're throwing at the Astros, they've been penalized. They've accepted they're penalized. If we think you're throwing at them, the penalties will be harsh. And they'll talk to the umpires about it. When the managers bring out the lineup cards, the umps will tell them, beware. This is what I'm telling you, and this is what the league office is telling you. You better make sure your guys don't do it. Now, they're going to get hit, and then people are going to wonder, well, okay, did they get hit? What was the pitch count? You know, who was the hitter? And if you do hit them, you're putting a guy on base. You're putting your team at risk. And I think Dusty Baker would be smarter than that unless it's blatant. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's a good thing Mike Fiers doesn't have to hit. And as a guy himself, you know, when you go on the road and you're a pitcher, fans are yelling all kinds of things to try to distract you.
Right.
He's going to hear rat, snitch.
Yeah.
When the A's are on the road, not just here, but the fans are going to do everything they can to distract him. And so he's going to have tunnel vision, just like the Astros. Their concentration has got to be on the game and not what's being said. And when you're on deck circle, you can hear everything that people are yelling at you. That's why I suggested tongue-in-cheek, but not really. Hire a good sports psychologist, take him on a road with you, and if players need to talk to him, I mean, it's all racial anyway, but now it's going to be worse, and I just think it's unprecedented.
Yeah, spring training is coming up very quickly. Do you think there's going to be a bunch of players that come out talking when they get interviewed about the Astros, talking negatively about the Astros? Do you expect that to be a huge thing, or is it going to be, you know, every now and again you might get a guy? Because it seems like to me that there's going to be a groundswell of players coming out against the Astros once spring training hits.
I think a lot of players, number one, you better make sure your house is in order.
Yeah.
Because they're investigating a lot of teams. Remember, it came out when this was first disclosed that the Astros had turned in 7 or 8 teams that were cheating electronically. And I remember seeing Will Clark's interview last week where he shrugged his shoulders and said, hey, they just got caught. People would be naive or stupid to think if you can use can cheat electronically and it benefits your team, you're going to try it. How much it benefits remains to Major League Baseball's investigators to figure that out. So you better make sure you have not get caught in violation. There have been players who have come out. A couple of Dodgers have done it. I think the media, everywhere the Astros go, the media is going to be around the batting cage asking players about it, asking the Astros about it. The Astros, their patience is going to be tested. I don't know if they're going to have a policy. Okay, ask us the first game, and that's it. We're not answering anything else, whether it's exhibition season or whether it's regular season, and get it out of the way because they're not going to be talking about it everywhere they go. Mm-hmm. And that'll be up to Dusty to tell media from other teams, look, guys, we talked about it then. We're not talking about it again. You can ask us all you want. If you want to talk baseball, we'll talk all the baseball you want to talk about. And after a while, I think with the media, it'll wear out maybe halfway through the season. But with the fans this entire season, it'll never wear out. If you want to shut everybody up, win.
Yeah, and I think that's a big key. The more guys that come out against the Astros, I think the better, because that's just going to be more fuel to the fire.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm interested to see how big a deal it becomes in spring training, but time will tell. So we are here, Payne and Pendergast, and I'm Wade Smith. Cecil Shorts filling in for Payne and Pendergast, and we are sitting with General John McClain talking all things sports. And he mentioned in a break that he wanted to talk to us a little bit about Hunter Pence and the ability or what he would bring to the Houston Astros. What were your thoughts on Hunter Pence, John?
He's 36 years old. He had 19 home runs last year, made the All-Star team, but he didn't even drive in 60 runs, buddy, at 297. And I remember when Pence was coming up through the Astros system, people were so fired up to see him because he was going to be a slugger. He's 6'4", and the Astros were on hard times back then. And my wife and I go to spring training every year, so we went to see him. First game we could see with him, based on when we were there, was at Dodger Town. And we went just to see Hunter Pence. There was such a buzz about him coming up through the organization. You look at Yordan Alvarez, the rookie of the year, there was no buzz about him. I was at spring training last year, and I see this guy like a tight end rounding first base, headed to second. And I told my buddy Mark, I said, man, if he hits that second baseman, that kid's done. But he slid. And I looked at my program. I said, Yordan Alvarez. I might have to keep an eye on him. He might be better for the Texans at his size. So there wasn't a buzz. But, man, when Pence came up, there was, and he won 2 World Series with the Giants. And I think if you get a guy around who's won a World Series like they have here, who's won a World Series, I think nothing bad comes from that. He has other offers. And so at this point, he's going to take whatever's best for his career and the best opportunity for him to play. Who knows if he wants to come back here, but he was a big personality and a really popular player. Wade, you asked me a question during the break, and I think I'd like to address it, about the 17-game schedule and Hall of Fame and statistics. When we're looking, a lot of the guys we consider played 12 games. Then it went to 14. Then it went to 16 and 1978, and when we consider players, you have to look at what they did against in their generation. Like a lot of people say, so-and-so couldn't play today. He only had 60 catches, but, man, today they have 100, which is ridiculous because he's getting 60 catches in 12 games. And when the rules are, when the DBs could pad their forearms and hit him in the head when he was coming across the middle, hit him in the knee, some of the biggest cheap shots I have ever seen was the Raiders safeties in the 70s with Jack Tatum and George Atkinson and what they would do to Len Swan. I mean, they'd be in jail today. You just you could get away with almost anything. And so we look at how you fared against the players of your era, and we try to judge them on that. But it's hard sometimes when you got these gaudy stats.
Yeah.
Of like an Isaac Bruce, who I'm glad we finally elected, and compared to the older guys who don't. And it was a It was very enlightening being on that Blue Ribbon panel for the Centennial class, considering guys back to the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. And I can first remember getting really interested as a kid in 60 when the Cowboys and Oilers came to Texas, and watching one on CBS, the boring, slow Cowboys who had one tie in their first year, and the Oilers with George Blanda throwing it all over the place, won the first two AFL championships. So I started watching back then, and the game has changed a lot, of course. So have the players. They're better athletes. They're in better condition. They have longer careers. The training is so much better and more knowledgeable, the medical, everything about it. But you still, some of those guys, they dominated their sport no matter what era they played in. And I'm glad we put a few of them as seniors into the Centennial class of the Hall of Fame. And there'll be two inductions, one for the ones we just put in the modern era, first Hall of Fame weekend, first weekend of August. And the next one will be in September for the Centennial class.
So I was listening to Deion Sanders on Media Row last week when he was all
flapping his yap.
Talking all this stuff, and he said something I want your opinion on. He said there's too many guys getting into the Hall of Fame.
I would have asked him, and okay, who do you want out? Give me some examples. He didn't say who he wanted out. Easy to yap about something like that and not say, okay, I'll take this guy out, that guy out, and that guy out, because I can make arguments. People are not in the room with us. There's two Hall of Famers in the room, James Lofton and Dan Fouts. They had told – I can't remember. I wish we had more Hall of Famers on our committee, because they observed 2 years, and they were just blown away by what all went into the selection process and how what a year-long responsibility it is to get the list down. And then to sit in the room this year, because there were no seniors or contributors, it was 6.5 hours instead of like 9 hours. So I was glad when they put them in there, and they both speak up. You know, we want to know what they think. There was one case, and I can't say who it was because what we say in there can't get out. And we were studying 4 linemen, all of them deserving to go. Alan Faneca has better statistics and better wins and Pro Bowls than anybody we just put in. They're all deserving. And I asked Dan Fouts, I said, okay, here's these guys. You're a quarterback. Which one would you have wanted in your offensive line? And he thought about it, and he explained about each one and why he picked the one he did, and I thought that was really good. James Lofton, boy, and you're going to talk about defensive backs or linebackers and stuff like that. James played, I think, 15 years, and he's very knowledgeable too. And I love talking to those guys. People go, well, the writers. Well, we've got broadcasters on the committee. I don't mind people criticizing us if they know the process. One time, Jamie Dukes and NFL Network was blasting us, saying, I know what goes on in there. I need to hear this, I that. So I asked NFL Network if I could debate him live on the air. And they said yes. So we
wanted all the smoke.
I like that.
First thing I said was, Jamie, I was listening to your criticism of our committee and a couple of our moves. Explain to the viewers what the process is, since you're critical of the selection. He didn't have a clue. And he's like, Porky Pig, blah, 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 blah. So I explained it. I said, this is how we get to that. And what he was saying about knowing what was going on in the room was not right. And one time, this was amazing to me, Steve Serby, longtime columnist and NFL writer for the New York Post, very respected, on our meeting that we had, top secret, they tell us over and over, nothing that's said in here can get out. And I have people ask me all the time, well, what about this? Who said what about that? I say, I'm sorry, I just can't do it. And so it was the year Lawrence Taylor came up. And there was a lot of debate, but the bylaws, we got the bylaws read to us again. And the bylaws are, it can have nothing to do with what happens off the field. Well, it's a no-brainer. Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White are the two greatest defensive players I've ever seen. And Dick Butkus is right in there with them. And so, of course, he got elected, but it was a lot of talk about him and a lot about the off-the-field stuff. And then somebody had recorded it. Somebody on our committee recorded it and gave it to Steve Serby, and he had every quote in his column.
Wow.
And, you know, other than giving us lie detectors,
yeah,
there's no way of knowing who did it.
Wow.
And people first looked at the New York people that are on there, but And, of course, Serby wore that like a badge. He did. Got it. Hey, if you can get it and go with it. But he had it, everything that was said in there, which was just amazing.
Speaking of the Hall of Fame class, and for those of you out there that don't know who all made it, but safety Steve Atwater was inducted along with wide receiver Isaac Bruce. Shout out to the University of Memphis and the Tigers and Memphis State back then, the first Hall of Famer in the history of the program. And then guard Steve Hutchinson, running back Edgerrin James, and safety first ballot Troy Polamalu. Now let me ask you this, John. Is the fact that Polamalu being a Steeler and being first ballot, was that that kind of put Hutchinson over the top of Fanica? Because like you said, statistically they matched up pretty well, and it's a, Fanica had an edge, but the fact of putting two Steelers on the same ballot, does that come into play when you guys are making decisions at all?
It the way it never came up, we also put Donnie Shell in on the Centennial class, their great safety, and Bill Cowher. So that were two Steelers there. Here's another one. Mm. You know, the Steelers had the greatest dynasty I've ever seen, and that was winning four Super Bowls in 6 years with a great defense, still the greatest, consistently greatest defense I've ever seen. The 85 Bears were the best I've ever seen for 1 year, and the Steelers were great on offense. They could run with Franco Harris. They could throw it with Bradshaw and Swan and Stallworth. And they were, and it was the Oilers' misfortune to be the best they've ever been and be in the same division with those great Steeler dynasties. And Polamalu, I felt going in, was as close as was a lock. Nobody else was close.
Yeah.
And one of the things, like Steve Hutchinson was a great guard for Minnesota and Seattle.
Yeah.
And we had statistical things, testimonials about how many guys, 1,000-yard rushers, like, as an example, when he was in the lineup, Sean Alexander, the running back, averaged 1,500 yards. Without him, he averaged like 700. And that was consistent. And Hutchinson was a physical, great player, and which was interesting because it was his wife looking for school district in Nashville this week and not Giselle looking for a school district. And when they talked about a Hall of Famer's wife is looking for a school here, everybody's like, so many celebrities and famous people moved to Nashville because it's the prices are great and the taxes in Tennessee are great. And
do they look similarly or something, Giselle and Steve Hutchinson's
just
wife?
Just blondes.
Just blondes,
that's
okay.
All I know. And so that's how it got out. And, of course, there's some media don't check things out. They hear it and they run with it. And then, of course, it was explained by a couple of media people there when they checked and found out. But I was glad Hutchinson got it. Alan Fanica, who's from Rosenberg and here, is from went to play at LSU. I feel confident Alan will get in. And we've received the most criticism of this class. And let me ask you guys what you think. Two safeties, Steve Atwater, along with Jack Tatum, the hardest hitting safeties I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leroy Butler, who was a great safety for the Packers, and people had just been blasting us because we put in Atwater over Butler. And they said, oh, they just did it because he'd waited longer. That never came up about, okay, let's put this guy in because he's waited longer. And I'm surprised it took Steve Atwater this long to get in there, because when he played, they were going to Super Bowls. He and Dennis Smith were the best and most physical safety combination in the NFL. Elway was the quarterback in the 80s, and I'm glad we finally put Atwater in there. Last year, I thought he had his shot. He came close. We put Champ Bailey, so I don't think we're putting two DBs from the Broncos, even though that never came up in the discussion. And the voting is anonymous, so you don't know how people do vote. But Atwater, I had no problem putting in Steve Atwater over Leroy Butler. Leroy Butler, I believe, will get in. But people acting like we're a bunch of morons, which they do every year. It's great to be on the committee. It's an incredible responsibility. And knowing how happy you make some people and some families. But you feel bad because you know how many are unhappy. Drew Pearson was devastated. He wasn't on that Centennial class. And I'm hoping like hell when we go back. And I'm on the seniors committee. There's five of us. And I'm hoping that next year, that Drew Pearson will get that senior nomination, which is today rubber stamped for Hall of Fame.
It is me, Wade Smith, and Cecil Shorts filling in for Seth and Sean. Those guys got a couple of days off, and we're joined of course, by General John McClain, brought to us by Horn Solutions. John, the Super Bowl went down on Sunday. It's a good ball game, but I want to talk about some of the production by the NFL 100, the commercial that they led off the game with,
and awesome.
And the actual presentation of the NFL 100 class that they did on the field. What did you think about all of that?
Thought it was tremendous, just like that commercial they had last year was tremendous. You know, they spent a lot of money. They have to pay for those rights, too, and $6.5 million for 30 seconds. And think they film those things in different places. And a lot of those guys, they have trouble walking, like Jim Brown, and they put them in there, and they have to go all over the country to film the sections. And then that little boy from Seattle, can you imagine what that's like to win that? That honor to carry that football and then to carry it on the field, hand to the referee to start the Super Bowl. My goodness, I thought it was just outstanding and second best thing I saw at that game that didn't involve the game.
What was the best thing?
Hips don't lie.
I think I know where you're going with this. Hips don't lie. So you were a fan of the Super Bowl halftime performance.
I thought it was outstanding, and I thought about the choreography that goes into that with all the dancers they had with them, not to mention J-Lo and Shakira, but everybody, and I guess they rehearsed for 3 months. And when I thought about everything that goes into the actual production, it just blew me away. Not the best I've ever seen. Prince playing Purple Rain in a rainstorm was still the best. Michael Jackson in 83 and U2 in New Orleans after 9/11, those were still the most moving I've seen, but man, it made me sweat.
what do you think about the sentiment from a bunch of people that watched the halftime performance that they thought it was too racy, it was too much
inappropriate.
Booty. It was too much booty. It was inappropriate for
too
their
much
kids.
Booty. I'll tell you something. When I had a little role in the movie Spring Breakers, and my wife and I went to the premiere, and it starts off with spring break on the beach with a lot of women topless jumping around in slow motion, and my wife leans over and says, there's way too many breasts in this movie. And I leaned over and said, there's no such thing as too many breasts in the movie. So I would say that about too much booty. And a friend of mine said it was too risque for kids, and I'm thinking, do you know what kids can get on the internet, what they can get on their cell phones?
That's true.
You know, they're whizzes from the time they're little. You guys got kids. You know this. They know more than we knew when they're 5 years old.
Yeah.
And no matter what you try to do to safeguard it, if they want to find it, they're going to find it.
That's true.
And so, and they had to have known. I mean, how foolish do you, let's be honest, dumb do you have to be to think when you've got Jennifer Lopez and Shakira going to do a show together, that you're not going to get exactly what you got?
I didn't think it would be a stripper pole on the dang on stage, though. I got my 8-year-old next to me. He don't know what a stripper pole is. Wade brought that to my attention. But still, a stripper pole.
He's going to ask.
Did he ask you a question? Dad, yes. what is that thing that she's on?
He's right, like, there? What's that pole doing there?
Said,
I'm like, don't worry
know,
about it, son.
Don't worry about it. I've never seen anything like that.
You'd have told her that's for her acrobatics act.
And
that's
it all is. In all honesty, there are people out there that use poles like that for exercise.
No question.
Because you can, very because strong. Like very, that's very another strong. Thing. When she's on that pole and she's in a certain position, you think of the stomach muscles that requires. And I know people don't want to hear that, but that is a fact. Some people do it. Now, she just had a movie, Hustlers, about strippers. So it kind of was off figure. She was also promoting her movie, which is about, it's already been in the theaters. It's about to come out where you can pay money to get it.
We actually seen that at your fundraising event. It wasn't necessarily poles, but it was maybe, what were the ladies doing?
It's either
in
a pole or it's not.
No, it wasn't. There wasn't a pole there. They were in like swings. They were like,
it was swings.
It wasn't a swing, but it was like a, it was a contraption.
They were swinging, yes.
Their body was.
No, actually, there was a pole there. I believe there was.
But it was all adults there, right?
It was an adult event.
So let me ask you this, John.
And it was raising money for the kids.
Is the Super Bowl a family event?
It is. I've been watching it since the first one, and I will always watch the Super Bowl as long as I'm taking a breath, and whatever I see out there, you know, I'm going to be prepared for. I was not prepared for Justin Timberlake and Janis Jackson. People forget there was a streaker in that game, and he lost. He got lost in the shuffle of Janet Jackson. So there's always going to be surprises. You just have to be prepared. But it gets people talking, and that's what they want. Let me ask you guys, what was your favorite commercial? Tell me one. Besides the NFL 100.
My favorite commercial was the one with Jason Momoa on there. I don't know if it was Rocket Mortgage. Was it Rocket Mortgage?
Yes.
That was hilarious.
Isn't that amazing way they can do that?
Yeah, it was digital, man. You talk about computer graphics, but that commercial had me rolling.
It
got my attention, and it had me. I was like, what the heck? Like, what is going on here? And I'm sure there was a bunch of ladies out there that were upset at that because they saw him in that way and they'd never seen him. Like, did you see that commercial, Cecil?
No, I didn't.
So what they did
I probably changed the diaper at that time.
Yeah, I mean, you got seven kids. That doesn't surprise me one bit. I mean, how many are in diaper right now?
Three triplets in diapers.
You can't even get the time for the Super Bowl set aside where you don't have to change the diaper.
Not at all. I wish. Tell my wife that, please.
But Jason Momoa, he's like walking to his house.
And he's the big muscle guy now.
Yeah, he's normal size, right? You know who that is, Jason. Mm-hmm. So he's walking to his house, and all of a sudden, he starts taking off clothes and everything, he just turns skinny.
His muscles disappear when he takes them off. They're all fake, and he's a little skinny guy.
I'm trying to think of how skinny he was, and then he gets on a bench and starts doing a bench press. He looks like he's like a 75-pound
malnourished.
Malnourished, real, real skinny. Okay,
but,
I got you.
But it looked real, and it was awesome the way they did it. His hair started thinning. It looked really bad, but – I'm sure there was a lot of ladies out there that were flabbergasted and upset by it, but I thought it was absolutely
hilarious. Against type, and that's why it got your attention.
Yeah. So
what'd you like, Cecil? Pick one.
For me, it might have been the Pepsi commercial with Missy Elliott, just seeing her back in the fold, dancing and getting back into it. And I think the artist with her was called Her. My wife's a big fan of her, so we went crazy over that commercial.
I like the Google one about the old guy talking about the
memory.
That
creeped me out.
That boy, I thought that was tremendous. Adweek, which does surveys, and they had the long list in USA Today yesterday of all of them. The worst one was Trump, and the best one that won in popularity was the one Groundhog Day with Bill Murray.
That was
number one. I wouldn't have put it number one for Jeep, but I would have put it in my top five.
Going to the actual game now, the Super Bowl, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs come out with the W 31-20, and about 10 minutes left in the game, it's 20-10, and it looks like the 49ers are going to pull it off. Were you surprised that the Chiefs were able to come back and win the game? And it wasn't a convincing fashion, but they went on and pulled off at the end.
When they were down by 10 and there was less than 7 minutes left, I thought, well, the Chiefs, if you knew falling behind was going to bite them in the butt at some point. Mm-hmm. You just couldn't keep doing it. You're going up against number two defense, number one pass defense. You got the best pass rush, 48 sacks, 9 more in 2 playoff games, and they sacked Mahomes 4 times. And then he brought them from behind and go from 1.5-point favorite to winning by 11. A lot of people are critical of Kyle Shanahan's play calling at the end. He was too conservative. Well, he threw a 44-yard pass to George Kittle that was wiped out because of offensive interference.
Did you agree with that call?
Well, as the rule is written, you cannot extend your arm. And he extended his arm, so he violated the rule. If they don't like it, don't have the rule like that.
Yeah.
It was a rinky-dink call, yes, but it was by the book.
Yeah.
So my problem I have with it is the Minnesota Vikings, Kyle Rudolph, actually pushed off in the end zone, won the game against the Saints.
Time.
And so if you're not going to call that, you can't call the play on Kelly.
And they came out and said, we're standing by that. We're not going to change it. They made the right call.
Exactly. So you can't 1 minute say that this is the correct call, right, and then the next minute go to the letter of the law rule in the Super Bowl.
Well,
I just thought it was ticky tack.
You know, it's everybody did, but it is the letter of the law.
Yeah.
And my problem was Shanahan at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
You know, he had 3 timeouts left, take a shot. And people said it's because he didn't have confidence in Garoppolo. And he said, that's not it. It's because the other quarterback, he was worried about giving Mahomes some, you know, 20 seconds and 3 timeouts and coming back, which is kind of the ultimate respect. But people being critical, Shanahan, I think if you had a chance to hire him, most teams would hire him if they had a vacancy. But I thought it was fun. I'm glad Andy Reid won.
Yeah.
You know, after the game, I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to get a double cheeseburger with extra cheese. And then
you got to love it.
He's asked yesterday, did you sleep with a trophy? No, I slept with my trophy wife. And people are so – happy for him because he's such a good man. And it's funny, at 61, he's new school. Kyle Shanahan at 40, he's old school. They, you know, with Mahomes and Reed, they're the favorite next year. Mm-hmm. Everybody's already picking them. I will not pick them because the last team to win back-to-back was the Patriots in 03 and 04 when they won their second and third. It's hard not only to get back 2 years in a row, but to win 2 years in a row. And you'd think teams like Baltimore and San Francisco would be the hungriest throughout the offseason. And so if it's not Kansas City, it'd be Baltimore by most people. The column I'm writing Sunday, where do the Texans stand in AFC hierarchy right now without the draft and free agency? Where do you guys think they fit in this hierarchy of AFC teams that obviously Kansas City is going to be number one?
I think that just on the AFC, right? Not the whole NFL. Let's see. You got Kansas City. You got Baltimore.
Roethlisberger's coming back.
I'm not sold on them. I got them at three.
Yeah, the Texans are the third best team in the AFC right now.
I got them at three. And I think what Deshaun continues to develop, and I think a lot depends on O'Brien. I think he needs to give the play calling up. And you know, that's a lot to do, to be a GM, the head coach. That's a lot. Give it up. And I think they can do something special.
Yeah, but is he going to give it up? There's nothing in – you don't know. I'm going to ask John McClain. Is he going to give up play calling duty?
I have no idea. When we ever talk to him again,
I don't know.
It might be at the combine where he's in up there in front of everybody, and I'll ask him about Tim Kelly because first year with George Godsey, he's a position coach. Second year, he's coordinator, and he's calling plays. Didn't work. Bill took it back. O'Brien loves coaching Watson. Watson loves O'Brien.
Yep.
And this year when Fuller was in, averaged 26 points a game. They're one of the highest scoring teams in the league. And without him, it was 19-something. So we figure Fuller's going to get hurt again. So to me, finding another receiver, a fourth one, who's really fast and can bring the speed like all those great rookie receivers this year. Like they get A.J. Brown, DK Metcalf. Those
same
are second-round picks. Texans have a second-round pick. By the way, Aaron Wilson and I's first mock draft is on – HoustonChronicle.com and Texas Sports Nation, and we'll be in a Chronicle. I'm not sure when. I'm guessing Sunday. So we both have them taking DBs with that second-round pick. But right now, to me, clearly, they're the third-best team. John Lopez yesterday asked me, said that Pittsburgh, even Cleveland, by the odds makers, have a better chance to go to the Super Bowl than the Texans. And I said, well, that's the way it was last year. Remember, everybody picked Indy. Texans were way down. They won it again. I'm sure a lot of people now are going to pick the Titans because of what they did in the playoffs. But I'm still – I picked the Colts like everybody else, and I might pick the Titans, but I believe right now Texans is the third-best team.
I will say this, though, about Pittsburgh. That team did not have his quarterback last year. Juju Smith-Schuster missed a bunch of time, and they were right there in it to the end. So that between them and the Texans, I think they're probably on the same level. So Get Cleveland out of there. No offense.
Come on, that's my hometown. They let me down every year. I'm used to. Yeah. I lost my train of thought. But going back to, the offseason, boom, free agency. Who should they target? Because I'm thinking defensive line, corner. You got some good guys coming out.
There's two biggest needs, as you guys know, corner and pass rusher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wrote a thing last week that on Texas Sports Nation, where most of my stuff I write goes, along with HoustonChronicle.com. Three guys that could really help that problem. Jacob Martin going into his second year. Charles Minnehue going into his second year with the Texans. Martin's third overall. And then Duke Ejiofor. They were counting most players. You guys went through it. Did you make your biggest improvement between your first and second year, or did it take you longer?
It took me longer.
Because opportunity?
Took me longer. It just took me longer because of just the situation that I was in. Yeah, I think a lot of it has to – I mean, I started my first year as a rookie, but I don't think I made my best strides like years 3, 4, 5. Like in those years, that's when I started getting a lot better as a player.
For me, it was from year 1 or year 2.
Yeah, because you learn what it's like to be a pro on and off the field.
Yeah.
So I think he'll be better. I believe that Martin, who he's too small – to be a full-time player, but he's having him as a situational rusher is good. Ejiofor blew out his Achilles early in the offseason. He went to every meeting. He went to every practice. He didn't fall behind mentally. That's three guys who could help the pass rush with Watt and Merciless. I still think they need another one. This year, because it's the last year of the CBA, you get to use franchise and transition tag. So that's two guys like Reader and that they could bring back. They have 19 free agents, 18 unrestricted, one restricted. And I figure it's like six or seven of those guys they really have to have back, including guys like Hyde and Fells, who are not going to break the bank. And we know that Bill O'Brien, based on what we've seen, he's going to make moves. He's like football version of Daryl Morey. He's not going to sit on his hands. And so I can't wait to see what moves. It won't surprise me if he doesn't do something. If he sees some corner he likes or a pass rusher, trade back into the bottom of the first round. Don't know what he would give up, but I could see it happening. And you know they'll sign a couple of free agents. I don't think they'll break the bank on one. They'd like to sign Watson and Tunsil and Cunningham to extensions, but they don't have to. And but I think it's going to be a really intriguing offseason because of Trader Bill.
Real quick, do you think that the Texans will take care of Watson before or after the new CBA is done?
Well, that new CBA, I think, is going to be done this offseason. And they're talking about having a vote on the 17-game season. I don't think they'll have a vote unless they know it's going to pass. And it's coming. Players are going to get a lot of advantages. It just seems so hypocritical to be so concerned about safety and add another game. And I don't care if you take away two preseasons or one preseason. A lot of starters aren't playing anyway. But I'm all for players getting everything they can get as far as money, benefits, insurance. And something to me, if I'm a player, that I would fight for more than anything is insurance for lifetime, absolutely, which the owners say is too expensive in a multi-billion dollar business. Somehow that ought to be, you want another game to make more money, give us lifetime insurance. But I don't know if that's going to happen. But I think it depends on what they offer him. You know, when Mahomes turned down $40 million a year after he dislocated his kneecap last year, knowing how that can happen, I think Watson will be the second highest paid player in football, and I think Tunsil will be the highest paid offensive lineman when they sign. And the longer you wait, the more it's going to cost you.
No question about it. Thank you, John McClain, Hall of Famer. Steve Atwater definitely is a Hall of Famer, and he's a Hall of Famer, to me, in my opinion, above Leroy Butler.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.